from Coach Popovich, he was a hard truth guy. Mm. And I think it was something that was really important as I started my career, one as a player, but that I held on to. And I always kind of thought of him as a role model and a mentor. You got to be able to deliver it even when it's going to feel harsh, because it's the truth. I mean, you're not here to demean people, and he might get the wrong reputation for his curt comments at halftime and stuff. You know, he's a wise guy, but he really is thoughtful. He's smart. He cares. He cares a ton about his players. I think he cares a ton about the game.
Hello, everyone, and welcome in to the Youth Hoops Pod presented by Pro Skills Basketball. Before we jump into today's conversation, please take a minute to subscribe to and or follow our podcast wherever you listen to your podcast at. And if you enjoy the conversation, if you enjoy our content, please leave us a 5-star review, as we are trying to grow and get our message out to as many audience members as we can. We really appreciate it. Jumping into today's conversation, we have a really awesome and very different conversation coming from the Youth Hoops Pod today. We've been jumping around on a whole bunch of different topics. And this one is another new one to prepare for our audience. So today we are going to be talking about Overtime Elite, and we're going to get more into the Overtime Elite League and what it's all about, and take a deeper dive for any of our audience out there that is unfamiliar with it. But in order to have that conversation, we do have a special guest on the pod today. I'm very excited to chat with him. Brandon Williams, who is the head of basketball operations at Overtime Elite, is joining the pod today. Brandon, I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy day to join us.
Thanks for having me, Christian. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. So we're going to, have a conversation here that's going to kind of be almost two-part. The first part of this combo, Brandon, we're going to dive into a little of your background. I don't know a tremendous ton about you, to be fair. A lot of these pods, I kind of have Brendan, who sets me up with people I don't know a ton about, and I go in and do a lot of research. So I've researched a ton about you and learned, and man, you sound like you have a really incredible journey. So I want to really quick start with your background. I know you played at Davidson, in college. Did you play with Brendan, or what years were you at Davidson?
Man, I'll take that as a compliment, or Brendan should be upset, because I'm much older than Brendan is. So I'll just say that I look young for my age. Brendan came along at a different era. I think is that school was really blowing up. I'd like to consider myself part of the foundation that was laid in the mid 90s. When we were battling to be above 500, we still played in a pit, and Coach McKillop was not quite a legend. Then there came a new group that started to put that our program on the map in terms of tournaments and tournament wins, and Steph, and you know, sort of rest is history. So we've got a great family that connects us, but we are certainly years apart.
Yeah, hopefully I did piss Brendan off there. That would actually make me happy. We poke at each other quite a good bit. So no, but that's awesome, man. So you were there in the early days, and you mentioned Coach McKillop being there in his early time. He's gone on to become a pretty, you know, household name in the coaching world, and people who really know basketball. He's such a well-respected coach. Brendan always talks about McKillop teaching him about how much the details mattered. He, you know, and Brendan's been pushing that on me. The small details matter. The small details matter. And he said Coach McKillop spent a lot of time, coaching that and putting that in. Did you take anything away from Coach McKillop in his early days? Did he leave any impact on you that, you know, led not only to your future hoops career, but to today?
Well, you know, the mark of a great coach is he never stops coaching you. But, you know, to that point, there are plenty of things I learned while I was there. And, you know, I went as a 17-year-old freshman, and I had big dreams of playing in the NBA. I had no idea how to do it and if I could get there. What specific things I'd have to do. Coach had never had an NBA player before. As I mentioned, we were 10 and 20, I think, the year before I got there. So this wasn't even a program that had had a lot of success. But, you know, I had a coach that believed in me. And the first thing he told me was, you gotta say it out loud. You know, you have to commit to your dreams out loud, because people will hold you accountable. There are folks that are going to pull for you, hold you accountable. And if people want to laugh at you, they'll hold you accountable. You said you want to be an NBA player. Why are you doing that? You know, you want to be an NBA player. Why are you eating that? Why aren't you in the gym? And then others sort of want to just poke at you because you think you're special. But in any case, he always mentioned to me the difference in those that will make it and those that will get close, you know, are the ones that, you know, are willing to put themselves out there and take the criticism, you know, take on the scrutiny. So that was the first. You know, he used to talk, and Brendan might remember this, he used to talk about shortcuts, you know, no shortcuts. And it's usually about touching the line when you're running a 17 or something of the sort, you know, running a suicide, not taking shortcuts. And, you know, a good coach will always talk about like the 2 inches, or it's a game of inches, and yep. Coming up 2 inches on a line, two inches short on a shot is a miss, you know, two inches short on reaching in the passing lane gets you beat, you know, because you missed the deflection. Mm-hmm. But broader, you know, just no shortcuts. There's really no shortcut to success. I mean, you can shortcut your way into the middle. You can't get to the top. And in the world of call that upper 1% or half of 1%, you know, the 450 or so that actually get to play with an NBA jersey on, there's no shortcuts to get there. Mm-hmm. And so he's always reminding me of that. And you know, in the world of, you know, sort of the smart coach's lessons, he always talked about making an investment in your future. You know, he used to yell at me all the time, and it felt a little bit more advanced than I could understand at 17. Mm-hmm. But after being with him, you know, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, and I started to see it, that every day was an investment, you know, that my career and my practice was like a bank. And, you know, you had to make the deposits. That rang true, particularly by the time I was ready to retire. I built up enough equity that I had a great opportunity to start a second career in basketball. So a couple of things that are off the trust, commitment, care line that you'll get a lot from Wildcats, but that was real personal to me.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. I mean, my goodness, we could break that down for a whole podcast episode itself. So many different things. I think one of the things that stood out there is you talked about you have to commit and chase your dreams, and we'll get into Overtime Elite and you know, you pushing a new platform into this industry of basketball here. And you know, I guess I could see some of the still committing and chasing the dreams now. But you mentioned in being an NBA player, coach hadn't coached an NBA player. You went on to play in the NBA. You went on to win an NBA championship, which, man, it's cool for me to just be here chatting with somebody who has reached the pinnacle of the sport. That is amazing. And you did that with the Spurs, playing for Coach Popovich. Man, can you just take me through, or our audience through, a little bit of what that was like? I mean, goodness, that's the top of the mountain. That's what everybody with a hoop dream hopes they could achieve one day.
Yeah, well, that journey was not without a lot of pit stops and some rerouting along the way. I should say this for all of our friends. I am the first Davidson Wildcat to be a Golden State Warrior. I'm certainly not the best Davidson Wildcat to be a Golden State Warrior. But, you know, the irony is that my first job was the Golden State Warriors, and it was after an unfortunate incident where Latrell Sprewell, you know, had a physical altercation with the coach. And anybody that's been around knows how taboo that is. I mean, for players to get into some kind of altercation, but certainly to cross over to player coach dynamic. But, you know, it happened, and I was in the minor league and I got a call up. And in that environment, if you can imagine how difficult, and some would say really bad, the culture was, that players or a player could get into essentially a fight with a coach, and mm-hmm. that many of the other players didn't stop it. It was awful, I mean, to be honest with you. I was so happy to have a job and to learn from some great, I mean, Muggsy Bogues was on that team, who had a lot of respect for, or Bimbo Coles or Brian Shaw. There were a lot of really good players in that organization, but it was a tough culture. And the very next year, I was in San Antonio. So I'd gone from probably the worst environment I'd ever been in, losing and otherwise, to a champion, right? This was before the legend of Pop. I mean, he was Greg. He was Greg then, who became Pop. But it was one very similar to Davidson, because there were some really wholesome lessons that you learn A lot of people try to tell you too corny or don't work in professional sports, but I mean, it mattered that you had respect for what you do. You had respect for your teammates and respect for process and just respect for authority, because, you know, you could always say as a professional player, the kind of things that guys would do, like, I make more money than the coach, you know, I'm more important. What's going to happen if I don't come to practice? I'm still going to play. I mean, they need me. I got a guaranteed deal.
Yeah.
In that world, you saw things like David Robinson, who was a top 50 player, start to pull himself to the background for this young star that was up and coming called Tim Duncan, named Tim Duncan. And it's nothing harder than an aging superstar in basketball to accept it and potentially kind of defer to someone younger. In the same jersey, you know, when he could look around a gym and think like, I raised these conference banners and I'm kind of the reason why we're building a new building. But Tim was emerging as a star, and that was a certain humility that I think you find if you think about the decades of success that the Spurs have had. That's actually a cultural trait. On that team, you had journeymen like Avery Johnson and the late Jerome Kersey and Mario Elie, who were studs in their own right, not top draft picks, but guys that had worked their tails off for years and outcompeted others and found a way to have double digit NBA careers. In fact, to be champions in other places for Mario. Steve Kerr, you know, an eventual coach and champion in many different respects. There was a lot of humility given all the success. It was an older team. You know, that team was, you know, 31 plus. I mean, there might have been 9 guys on the team that were 30 years old or older. And there were only 3 or 4 of us that were, call it, 25 or under. So it was an older team, something you don't see much anymore. From Coach Popovich, he was a hard truth guy. And I think it was something that was really important as I started my career, one as a player, but that I held on to. And I always kind of thought of him as a role model and a mentor. You got to be able to deliver it even when it's going to feel harsh, because it's the truth. I mean, you're not here to demean people, and he might get the wrong reputation for his curt comments at halftime and stuff. You know, he's a wise guy. But he really is thoughtful. He's smart. He cares. He cares a ton about his players. I think he cares a ton about the game. You know, he could tell you the truth. Hey, I'm thinking about waiving you. Thinking about cutting you. You know, why, coach? Because, you know, I'm concerned that it might not be the best fit. Mm. And in the world that I was in, which was always kind of making a team, not a guaranteed guy, but someone that had to earn the trust of a coach, who had to really get a champion. Hearing the truth was important, because I need to know what my chances were. I mean, I couldn't waste time in the wrong camp. And more than anything, he taught me a lot about being honest and upfront and taking the bull by the horns. That starts with kind of face-to-face, hand-to-hand combat with the folks that you work with.
Yeah, man, that, again, amazing. I'm so intrigued. I feel like we could take so many deep dives. I'm calling you from Charlotte right now. So Muggsy Bogues rings a great bell here for the Hornets. And just awesome, man, that first of all, you got to play with so many great players. And I think it's really interesting that you were with Coach Popovich and Coach McKillop. Like you said, he was just Greg, or McKillop hadn't turned into what he had been yet. So such a cool perspective, getting to see them in their early days as they were developing and learning how to develop other people. One more little bit of your background, because I feel like I'm seeing some elements into maybe leading into what you're doing today based on the impact these coaches have left on you. So one more little bit before we jump into Overtime Elite on your background. So you go from playing at Davidson, winning an NBA championship, and then you step into the NBA front office, which I'm sure is going to heavily lead into our transition into Overtime Elite and what you learned there. I just would love to know what was it like being in an NBA front office, the stresses, the successes, what is it like, you know, being in charge of all those players in such a large scale organization that has such an impact?
Well, you know, I heard it well from Sam Presti some years ago. Obviously, I was an aspiring manager. I went to the league office to learn as much as I could about the business, you know, player development, life skills, operations on the court. And at some point, you know, I really started to direct my attention to the front office because I thought my best skill, I didn't think I had a coach's voice, you know, whatever that means, it means a lot to the artist, but I didn't have a coach's voice. But what I thought I could do well was I could put puzzles together. That made sense, you know, like I liked the challenge that got a lot of other people a little annoyed because in our world, you want quick results. You know, you're measured in wins and losses, and they come in 40 minutes or 48 minutes, right? You know whether you were successful or not, right? At the end when the clock goes to zero. And in the management, on the manager side, you have to be able to see a lot further down the road, and you have to manage what Sam called multiple streams of information. And I've shared this with folks that have worked with me, worked for me. Multiple streams of information, whether that's just the coaches and development piece, whether it's health and performance and strength and nutrition, or it's analytics, tool building, whether it's scouting, community, and sort of all the other facets of team operations. No one thing will make you successful. Like, you could have a really smart coach, and he's got smart coaches that work with him, and they can draw up great stuff, side out of bounds and baseline out of bounds and after timeout. But if you don't get the right players, then, you know, you got great plays and no execution. You got really talented players, right? And poor leadership or poor culture or poor chemistry, and you can't win. You got players who only want to play and don't care at all about their off-court brand and managing themselves in the community, and the fans don't support you. And they want players traded, want players in that they can get behind and support, fall in love with, buy their jerseys, and so forth. And just go down the line, and how to get all of that to come together. That's why it's so difficult, and why it was so awesome to be part of that in the Spurs, or why people cry when you see them win championships. Because if they've been on this journey and they realize, man, we've been so close on so many different occasions, and it just didn't work. It didn't. We thought we had the right team. We thought we had it. And then we figured out too late that there was something that another team had done a little bit better that brought them together, that they gelled. Or I kind of reveled in the idea that I could be that kind of conductor, you know, and we all have our challenges. And I was optimistic that I could one day be in a position to do that. But every day is just, there's a different set of challenges that we face. Players' confidence, players' homesickness, coaches' aspirations. You know, like, you hope on any given Thursday that everybody loves their role and they're given 100% only to that thing because it's so hard anyway. But the truth is, on any given Thursday, there's someone in the organization that's hoping for another job, you know, that's thinking about, how do I get to be a head coach, or how do I get from behind the bench to the front of the bench? I had been fortunate that my first role was as a G League GM, as a D League GM. Okay. And so with a much smaller staff, it gave me the opportunity to be very intimate with my coaches, with the coaches, with the trainer, with a 7 to 8 man team staff. We could all be on the same bus together. We could eat together. We could sit around one table. So you could talk about each of those issues. I started to see how to integrate in a different way. If you had people that respected the other's job and didn't view one as more important than the other, of course, the coach is always going to be the most visible star you have in any organization. But that it really started with an understanding of the different roles and appreciation for the individuals, and then kind of a respect. And then if you got somebody, you know, at the next level, if you got somebody who actually had a knowledge in that space, so a coach who understood performance a little bit, or scientists that understood coaching, or the trainers that, you know, also could connect to kind of equipment and logistics, that we could be a much more, just a higher chemistry, a higher level chemistry, you know, team and organization. And then you scale it as we get bigger. I moved over to the Sixers and got to do a little bit more with a bigger organization and play my part. You know, I didn't run it, but I got to play my part. And you just keep graduating. The thing that everybody loves talking about the most is actually just making decisions on players. And I mean, that's a whole pod in and of itself. You know, it's just kind of working to the draft or working to a trade deadline, and how much information you take in, how many conversations you have. And truth is, you might get nothing done. But it's all the work by all those people to come together around one player that you draft, number four. That is really the magic.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I really appreciate the insight. I feel like I could ask you so many hundreds of questions how trade talks really go down and how those things really occur. Because, you know, I just see the flashes on ESPN that someone got traded. But it's always intriguing. Like what was happening behind the doors? What were the conversations? And like you said, there's so much to think about. Not only how does this player play on the floor? Do they sell tickets? Or do the fans love them? Coaches? Do they coach well? I just love how you brought up all the different elements.
This concludes part one of our podcast with Brandon Williams. Next week, we will be releasing part two, where we will discuss Overtime Elite and the Overtime Elite League and what exactly that all is. Stay tuned for next week's new release on Thursday of part two of our podcast with Overtime Elite and Brandon Williams.